Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the partially thawed-out wild animal compound in Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network we call Blog Talk Radio as we reach around the world. Hello to our listeners in Australia, England, Ireland, South America, and all across North America, and including the small burg of McCordsville, Indiana. It's a pleasure to have you along. This week, we're very privileged to have as our technical engineer, our studio producer, Billy Willard from the fine state of Virginia, and a little bit later on in the program, our teacher of the year, Amy Swihart, and from the Wild World News Studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, now HD, the honorable, distinguished, and usually rather prompt, Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Well, good evening, Mr. Batson.
We're very excited tonight.
Oh, yes, we are.
Because we are hosting royalty because Colonel Theodore Roosevelt is going to be joining us in the program. And I'm very excited. You know what I want to know is a little insight of what he thought of last night's State of the Union address and how he would handle the government in this day and age.
Oh, that's a great thought.
Because, you know, he's always been considered one of our best presidents.
Yep, one of my favorites.
Absolutely. I mean, they didn't put his likeness on that mountain for nothing.
If it wasn't for him, I wouldn't have got to live in Panama.
Well, there you go. My gosh, I didn't even think of that. That's absolutely fantastic. So how's the weather in Indianapolis?
Well, we're looking at 33 degrees, and with the temperatures we've had the last few weeks, it feels like 60.
It does. Man, I'll tell you what, I never thought that I would enjoy 30-degree temperatures.
It's wonderful.
Oh, my Lord. 20 and 25 below zero. We're just not made for that.
We're not hairy enough.
No, we're not. I'm working on that, though, I'll tell you right now.
Yeah, well, good luck.
Yeah. Well, this part of Wild World is brought to you by Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo. Go to their website, ChautauquaLakeBigfoot.com, and you can download 6 hours of the recent Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot Expo that occurred April 26th, 27th, 28th with our good friend Billy Willard, Steve Calls, Bob Gimlin, Melissa Hovey, and myself. If you're a fan of the Bigfoot programs on the Discovery Channel and the National Geographic Channel, and you know, by the way, Dr. Day, that Theodore Roosevelt wrote about the Bigfoot in one of his journals.
Oh, that's right. Those stories.
Absolutely. So we'll have a chance to talk to him about that. But it's there, video on demand for $4.99, Chautauqua Lake Bigfoot. And let me spell that for you, Chautauqua, lakebigfoot.com. They make it possible for Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
It's now time from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News for January the 30th. Now, we're going to start the news out tonight with a bizarre story, and we're going to end the news with a bizarre story tonight. Are you ready?
Great. Yes.
All right. Now we're going to head to the Vatican for our first story tonight.
Oh.
Now, two white doves were released by children standing alongside Pope Francis as a peace gesture.
Mm-hmm.
Were attacked by other birds. Now, as thousands watched in St. Peter's Square on Sunday, this last weekend, a seagull and a large black crow swept down on the doves right after they were set free from an open window at the Vatican.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, one of the doves lost some feathers as it broke free from the gull.
Yeah.
But it's not clear what happened to the doves as they flew off, but they did get to fly off. So.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, is that pretty weird? Is that
there's something going on there?
Peace doves attacked at the Vatican. That's a little disturbing. Well, we're going to end with a disturbing story too. So
I can't wait.
All right, what's big this time of the year in Hawaii?
Not a clue.
Well, it's the first round of the annual survey of humpback whales off Hawaii.
Oh.
And so far this year, hundreds of whales have been counted.
Good.
Yeah,
great.
More than 800 volunteers fanned out across the shores of Kauai, Oahu, and Hawaii for the Hawaiian Islands Humpback Whale National Marine Sanctuary Ocean Count.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a big syllable.
Yeah. Now, they're really happy there's hundreds of whales there, but maybe this is the reason they're there for a box lunch. At the same time, an invasion of box jellyfish have prompted officials to close the bay there in Oahu.
Mm.
Yeah. Scores of people have been stung so far.
Well, you know what they say is a good cure for a jellyfish sting.
Yes, we've discussed this before. You like your way, and I like my way.
What was your way?
Well, my way is Adolph's meat tenderizer.
Oh, well.
That works very well on taking the sting out. Now, tell our listeners what your favorite thing is.
Oh, it's simple. I just have your neighbor urinate on your injury.
Yeah. I'll
never
go
tried
with
it.
The meat tenderizer.
I've just been told that. I'm so sorry.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
All right. Well, this sounded like a good idea. Baytown, Texas. One person was treated at a hospital and others suffered injuries during a Pamplona-style bull racing event Saturday, which involved 3,500 people. Yes. Now, if you don't know anything about large farm animals, you probably shouldn't be running in front of them.
No, 3,500 people and some bulls just doesn't sound like it.
Just think about it before you. All right, well, don't go fishing for puma with dogs. Boise, Idaho, officials are on the hunt for a mountain lion that attacked two dogs running with a mountain biker in the foothills on Monday.
Oh.
Yeah, now both dogs were attacked, but they're expected to survive.
Hmm.
So that's like you're in a boat and you got a trolling motor, you got your fishing lure out behind the boat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, they were fishing in the puma?
No, I'm just saying that's kind of what it's like. You're on a bike, your dogs are running behind you.
Oh, I got you. Okay.
Yeah, you're trolling for mountain lions.
Yeah, all right.
Don't take bait into the woods.
Yeah, you're rather deep tonight, Dr. Day.
Oh, yeah, we've discussed this before.
Yeah.
All right, we got some good news from West Virginia. The National Park Service has stopped a proposed extension of the Western Maryland Rail Trail to Paw Paw because it could threaten bats that roost in three tunnels along the route.
Oh.
Yeah, now, as we know, disturbing the bats' habitat could make them susceptible to the white nose syndrome,
which has been devastating toward bats.
It's killed millions of bats the last few years.
Yeah, that's not good.
All right, now you'll relate with this next story. Butte, Montana. The Butte Silver Bow Council of the Commissioners has passed an emergency measure allowing Mark Dawson, owner of the Fishbowl Pet Store, to resume selling mice and rats as food for snakes.
They made it against the law to do that?
Now the council approved a 90-day moratorium on a 1977 ordinance that banned the sale of mice and rats in Butte Silver Bowl.
That's stupid.
Yeah, pretty strange, isn't it?
Yes, that is.
Everything needs to eat.
Well, that's true. I'm just thinking, I'm sure in Idaho that they use mice and rats for laboratory experiments. So.
Oh, yeah.
Somewhere.
But anyway, yeah, you know what that's like, because you've had to feed lots of animals over the years with.
Well, yes. What we do, though, is we buy them already frozen. We call them rat sickles, and we just thaw them out and feed them to the snakes. So, and the lizards and the turtles that eat them and that sort of thing. But, yeah, they should have a permanent moratorium against that.
Yep.
Okay.
All right. Are you guys, stop horsing around. Pikesville, Kentucky. Pike County is trying to determine the best way to deal with a pack of wild horses that are causing property damage and tying up traffic and just being a complete hazard.
Hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think probably the best way to deal with them is put up a basketball goal. And maybe they'll start playing horse. Yeah, all right. Sorry about that one. All right. The
Colonel, have you ever dealt with wild horses?
Idaho. What's that?
I was asking the Colonel whether he has ever dealt with wild horses. Colonel Roosevelt.
Well, if I may, sir, I've dealt with wild horses from the Badlands all the way to the panhandles of Texas. But I've never quite heard radio like this. Congratulations, gentlemen. It's a very interesting program.
Thank you.
Quite well.
Thank you. We appreciate that. That means a lot coming from you.
All right. Well, the Wolves win one in Boise, Idaho. Wildlife managers called off a professional hunter who has been killing wolves inside a federal wilderness area since last year, amid an effort by advocates to convince federal courts to halt the hunt.
Well, they should.
Well, yeah.
Especially on federally protected land, I mean.
No, as we all know, nature has its own way of dealing with overpopulation.
Who says that they're overpopulated?
Exactly.
I mean, the wolves have the numbers that they have in their litters depends on the availability of food. That's why when your national park systems, which was established by Colonel Roosevelt, they tell you not to feed the various chipmunks and squirrels because if they eat more food, they have larger litters, and that throws everything off. So if there's a lot of food available for the wolves, they'll have more pups.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we just need to learn to leave everything alone. It'll take its own course.
Oh, absolutely.
For the most part.
Yes.
All right, now we've got a big fish story out of Rhode Island. Oh, and by the way, the Old Farmer's Almanac says the next 2 weeks are going to be the best for fishing, so if you have the opportunity, get out there.
Okay.
All right, Rhode Island. Now, Al Anderson, a local charter boat captain, said that a man on his boat caught a young bluefin tuna weighing 14 pounds about 16 years ago. Now, Anderson tagged the fish and threw it back into the ocean. Now, last month, a fisherman in Nova Scotia caught the same tuna, which now weighs 1,200 pounds.
My goodness. That's incredible.
Yes.
My Lord.
That's a good life.
Yes, it is. My God.
1,200-pound tuna. Just 16 years ago. Well, that shows you how long, you know, they live and how long it takes them to get to a certain size. And
that's amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing. All right, now I threw this next story in just because.
Uh-oh.
Ludlow, California. A Southern California freeway smelled like a cookout when a big rig carrying 76 pounds of beef ribs caught fire. Yes, the rear wheels of the truck ignited Saturday night on the Interstate 40 in Ludlow.
Oh, my.
Oh, yeah.
There's so many things I could say.
And if it probably wasn't for the smell of burnt rubber, they probably could eat the ribs.
Well, yeah. You know, the longer they cook, the better they are.
That's right. All
I feel
right, our
sorry
next story
for
is for our teacher of the year,
uh-oh,
Miss Swihart.
Uh-oh.
Yes, we're heading off to Hawaii. Now, a Maui restaurant whose business partners include veteran Kiss rocker Gene Simmons is set to open despite concerns that it won't fit in with the Maui laid-back charm.
Yeah.
Now, the new restaurant is called Rockin' Brews, and it's set to open next month.
I heard about this, so I think I need to get to Hawaii pretty quickly.
I think you do.
Yeah.
road trip.
I'm thinking they're probably going to invite me. You know how they have that night, those few nights before they actually really open, where they invite, it's kind of like a sneak peek. Mm. I'm pretty sure they're going to invite me. I'm just sure of it.
Yeah. Well, you are Kiss's number one fan.
That's right.
At least in Warsaw.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's bigger fans, actually.
Warsaw.
Because
yeah.
I do not have any Kiss tattoos.
Oh, well.
And some people have a lot of those. I think they're pretty big fans.
That's never too late.
I know. Well, yeah. I don't know if I can handle that.
Yeah.
All right. We started the news out with a weird story. We're going to end with one. Now, for our listeners who are into the paranormal, local news, the Indianapolis Star on Sunday ran a story, the 26th, about the events detailed in Gary, Indiana, Michael Jackson's own stomping grounds,
mm-hmm.
about demonic possession. Now, this story is so bizarre, and we usually don't do stories like this, but since it's local news,
yeah.
Now there
hold
been,
on, I'm burning some sage.
Yeah,
okay,
there have
ahead,
been nearly 800 documented official records of this family in Gary. Now, the family lived in a little one-room house,
mm-hmm.
and started experiencing bizarre things around the house. I mean, I'm not going to go into any detail, because if you want to, you can look the story up and read it yourself. But
right.
it has it involves the Department of Child Services, psychological evaluations, police investigations, a series of exorcisms, and the story just goes on and on. It's just truly bizarre. But here, as of yesterday, the host of Ghost Adventures has purchased the house for $35,000. And they plan to do some investigating.
Oh, well, good luck
yeah,
with
now
that.
The family has moved out of the house. They now live here locally in Indianapolis.
Oh.
And I'm sure there's going to be a movie before too long, because that's usually how these things go. But if you have an opportunity to look up this story, you will be truly amazed and concerned and disturbed.
Oh, okay. Well, thank
anyway,
you that.
That's the two weird stories for the night.
Oh.
Now, the wild world facts of the day. Your brain is more active during the night than the day.
Oh, yeah.
Which makes a lot of sense when you deal with the people you work with and all your surrounding friends. And yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Also, Mrs. Swihart, you'll like this. There are more than 1 trillion bacteria on each of your feet.
Hmm.
Oh.
I guess I probably ought to stop sucking my toes, right?
I guess you should.
Well, you know what? I gave that up many years ago when I could no longer put my toes in my mouth. So. No worries there.
There's a
wonderful
thing there. Well, that's the Wild World News for January the 30th.
Well, once again, a great job done by Dr. Henry Day and his staff at the Wild World News headquarters in Indianapolis, Indiana, newly renovated and now HD. We want to remind everyone, be sure you check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. It tells all about our wildlife rescue work that we do. Also, our wildlife education programs, and you can get a signed copy of our new book, Alphabet Swamp, available for $10, postage included. That's at LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. I also encourage you to check out our two Facebook pages, Larry Batson's Wild World, all about our blog talk radio show, and our fun page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends. It's that time, once again, from the first grade in Warsaw, Indiana, Mrs. Amy Swihart.
Oh, wake up, Billy.
You know we have a very special guest tonight, Mrs. Swihart.
I do know.
Colonel Theodore Roosevelt. And I was wondering, Colonel, are you a Kiss fan?
I do enjoy Kisses. Mrs. Roosevelt and I didn't have a great deal of displaying affection in public. But, of course, with six children, well, we did enjoy a kiss or two.
Woo! Hot and steamy.
I haven't had this much fun with people from Indiana since my visit in 1910.
Oh, really?
The beautiful Civil War Memorial you have in the downtown circle there. Imagine that full of people hanging off of the great fountain, listening to me speechify from one of the hotel balconies there along the circle.
Wow. That must have been just awesome.
Well, not for the people in the back row. We didn't have microphones and speakers back then.
Or hearing aids. So none of the people that couldn't hear didn't have hearing aids either. So
you'll often notice in the photos of people from my era making speeches outdoors, these great audiences, and you might wonder whether or not people heard the speeches. If you look closely at the photographs, you'll see the front rows are often full of newspaper men taking down the words of the speech, very often given a copy of the speech before or after. In the afternoon, the speech would be printed in the newspaper in the afternoon editions, and the people who attended could then read the speech that they didn't like to hear all that well earlier in the day.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, you were one of the great speakers of that, of any time, I should say, Colonel.
Well, I don't know that I made many good speeches, but I hope I spoke honestly and with some accuracy with regards to the issues before us.
Yes. So, speaking of issues, what's going on in the first grade, Mrs. Swihart?
You know what? There's so much going on in first grade right now. My head is spinning, and actually my brain works all night long, so, of course, I don't get very much sleep. But we missed a lot of school. And we finally got back to school, and actually one of the funniest things when we came back to school, of course, the kids always have so much to say, and one of the first things that one of the kids said to me, and I'm sure that this happened in the Colonel's day too, but one of the little boys, of course it's a boy because this is such a boy thing, no girl would ever do this, but he came up to me and loud and clear and said to me with his hand in the back of his pants, "Mrs. Swihart, my butt itches." I'm like, oh, welcome back to school for me. And, I just took a walk home. You know what? Feel free to take the hall pass and go see the nurse, okay? I called down there and I said, just want to let you know he's coming on down because his bum itches. And so I handle all sorts of things. I do the Band-Aids, and I do all of that stuff. But when it comes to the butt itching problem, that is something I will not deal with. So, anyway, that was my start back. Jealous. You probably wish you were here. I'm sure of it, right?
Yes, right.
Yeah. I know he washed his hands. The nurse made him wash his hands, and when he came back to the room, I made him wash his hands. I said, boys and girls, it's snack time. What do you want today?
Oh, my.
So anyway, but you know, tomorrow is a huge day in first grade.
It is.
In my room, it is in most of the first grade rooms. It is actually the 100th day of school, and we do activities every day leading up to the 100th day. We count, by twos, fives, tens, working our way towards 100. So tomorrow the kids are all 100 days smarter or 100 days brighter. So I have so many things planned in the room to celebrate their 100 days of higher intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And also we are doing a unit on China, and tomorrow is actually the Chinese New Year.
Oh.
So we have a big Chinese New Year celebration going on as well. We'll do some Chinese firecrackers. We have some Chinese food coming from a local restaurant, and the kids are going to try and learn how to use chopsticks. So I have balloons hanging from the ceiling, and we're popping a balloon every half hour, and inside the balloon is activities to do for the 100th day, like hop in place for 100 hops and count to 100 out loud by fives, just little activities. We have a cake coming from the bakery to celebrate our 100 days. Mm. The kids made really, really awesome, awesome hats, which I'll post pictures tomorrow because I'm so proud of them. And we made necklaces with 10 groups of 10 out of Fruit Loops. And they have some silly 100-day glasses.
Oh.
So we're going to learn songs and poems, and all of our math problems will be geared around 100. So, hey, that is just a lot of busy stuff.
Well, you know, Colonel Roosevelt requested a song earlier. Can you possibly, and also for the enjoyment of Billy Willard, perform for us one of the songs that they'll be singing tomorrow so we can kind of have a preview?
Please.
know, can I do it after the break?
No, that would be good.
Huh?
Now? That would be fine. Yeah.
Well, because I actually just I just pulled up two new ones that I'm teaching them, and I don't know the words so well. So, you know, I can do you're putting me so on the spot. You do know that, don't you?
Well, if you'd rather wait, then that's fine.
I will, but I do have to have the words in front of me, and I don't have them right at this very second.
We'll be prepared to enjoy that in a little bit later on in the program then.
How about that? I will do it then.
Okay.
Mrs. Swihart, is this
yes.
the Chinese Year of the Horse? Is that right?
It is. Yes. Yes. So, yeah, that's we've been studying. We've actually studied a lot. You know, it's first grade, so you can't get really in-depth. But we do. They've learned a lot. We talked about the panda.
Mm-hmm.
The panda, you know, that's a big thing. So we've learned about the panda. And we talked about, you know, the differences in, like, food and dress. We actually have a friend who is a custodian here who has taken a leave and is currently studying in China. So we did some Skyping with him, and he shared with us, you know, what McDonald's is like in China and Walmart, because those are very different from here.
Mm-hmm.
All these questions that the kids had. And we have a Chinese club at the high school. They're taking, there's a Mandarin is offered as a class there. They came in and did a craft with the kids and taught them some Mandarin.
No.
So, I mean, it's just been a wide range of things, but.
Colonel, have you ever been to China?
No, sir. Asia was never really on my list, but of course, my boys, Ted Jr. and Kermit, famously hunted in Mongolia and trekked across China in the late 20s, early 30s, I believe.
Oh, well.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I may have helped the demise of China. If you listen to the author James Bradley, his book Imperial Cruise, Settling the Russo-Japanese War with some benefit for the Japanese Empire, he blames me then for the Japanese aggression in China. Oh, I think it's a bunch of poppycock from a pudding head. I, of course, had some impact on the affairs between Asian nations.
Hmm.
Well, we should have the Colonel Roosevelt visit your class.
We should, actually. That would be really, you know what? And, you know, it would be great for first grade, but, I mean, I think more of our upper grades because they really hit history there, you know. And, yeah, that would be an awesome thing.
Mrs. Swihart, consider it a date. The next time I'm traveling through the area of Warsaw, Indiana, I'll stop by your school.
I hope so. And
I'll
I will
you
buy
some
you
stories.
I'll buy you a school lunch when you come.
You'll buy me what, madam?
I'll buy you a school lunch when you come.
Only if the state statutes of Indiana allow buying a dead president. A lunch, shall we say.
I don't even care what they allow. I am in charge. And I just would need to know if you would prefer white milk or chocolate milk.
What are most of the children drinking these days? White or chocolate?
You know, it's about half and half, really. And it's all skim milk, you know. It's gone to the whole very low-fat thing. But it is about half and half. We do offer strawberry milk as well, but it's not as popular.
That's my
favorite. I think I'll be the odd man out, and whatever we have for lunch, I'll wash it down with some strawberry milk. That sounds
there
right.
There you go. I'll splurge and get you, too.
I enjoy the strawberry milk as well, Mrs. Swihart.
Well, I myself am a white milk girl.
Yeah.
You know what? I can't do chocolate milk because when I was in grade school, I puked it up once, and I have not recovered ever since. I have not. I will never do chocolate milk again in my life.
Came out your nose, didn't it?
I don't even remember. It just came out, and it was It was horrifying, you know, at school. Ugh.
My wife feels the same way about cheesecake.
Oh, I don't eat cheesecake either.
Oh. Yes, she's very similar reaction.
Yeah.
We're so educational tonight. We're going to take a short break. Coming back with a wonderful song from Mrs. Swihart and a great conversation with Colonel Theodore Roosevelt. Folks, you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll be right back.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
We're Rascal Flatts. There's a place where ordinary people do extraordinary things every day. That place is called the American Red Cross. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org to learn more.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face to face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website, and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
We're going to be talking with Colonel Theodore Roosevelt in just moments here. We want to remind everyone that this part of the program is brought to you by McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. If you've never had the opportunity to see the Rockies of the West, you are missing a real treat. It's almost spiritual, I tell folks, when you look on those beautiful mountains. McGregor Mountain Lodge, right on the boundaries. In fact, you'll have bighorn and elk and mule deer right there behind your cabin or your lodge, whatever you decide to book. And now what a great time to go to Estes Park because the crowds are down a little bit. Still, driving through the park is phenomenal, and you'll see all sorts of wildlife, the sheep lakes, the bighorn coming down drinking eating the salt licks, the elk down in the low country waiting for spring, so they'll head up in the high mountains once again. It's just phenomenal. Here's their website, McGregorMountainLodge.com. Michael Hodges is the proprietor. And, of course, they had that 22 inches of rainfall a while back, and it was pretty devastating, but you know, ingenuity's done it all, and Estes Park has come back, and all the highways have been rebuilt, especially the one through Big Thompson Canyon. So you can get there now. It's not a problem. So I totally advise you to make that booking now and head out to Colorado, Rocky Mountain National Park, and stay at McGregorMountainLodge.com. Also want to remind everyone that this part of Wild World is brought to you by LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. Go to our website, and you'll find all about our wildlife lectures, also our rescuing wild animals and the various things that we offer. That's at LarryTheAnimalGuy.com. our guest tonight, and we've already had a chance to enjoy moments with him. Colonel Theodore Roosevelt's with us, and Colonel, it's great to see you once again.
Mr. Batson, Mr. Swihart, and Dr. Day, it's a delight to be with you and with your listeners on the Internet. Imagine what I could have gotten done as president if I had the Internet.
Oh, my goodness.
Probably not as much.
I'd be spending my day surfing. Of course, I used the telephone and the telegraph and letters by correspondence to the full benefit.
Absolutely. So I understand you had an opportunity to look over our recent State of the Union message that was presented last night by our President Obama. Do you have any thoughts about that and what you would do if you were the head guy in charge of this country?
Well, of course, we're all frustrated, I think, by the fighting going on between the executive and the House of Representatives. Not much fighting going on between the Senate, it being controlled by the same party as holding the presidency. But we expect the President and Congress to cooperate, to get the work done that's necessary to get done. I did not know the sort of problem that President Obama has. During my 7 1/2 years as president, the Congress was held by my party in both the Senate and the House. The Republicans prevailed. But very often I had to go around Republican leadership and find bipartisan agreement between progressive Republicans and Democrats to get the right thing done and to not worry about to whom the credit fell, but instead to make sure that we were doing good work for the American people who sent us to the nation's capital.
As it should be.
Absolutely.
If there's an issue that stands out, you gentlemen may have heard, the issue of the day seems to be the president's use of the executive order. Mm-hmm. For example, in the speech pointing out that he would raise the minimum wage for subcontractors and employees on federal projects to $10.10 an hour. And most constitutional scholars believe that he has the constitutional authority to do so. But he also intimated, I don't have the exact line of the speech in front of me, but that he would use by executive order, with or without Congress being behind him, the power of the executive to declare, now he wasn't exact, whether they would be national monuments or federal protected sanctuaries. But that's a tradition that dates certainly to my time in the White House when I used executive orders to, for example, preserve Pelican Island off the coast of Sebastian, Florida, as the first federal bird sanctuary. And when I used the National Monuments and Antiquities Act, the executive authority derived there, to name the entire national, the entire Grand Canyon a national monument. So I do believe if you read the speech, you'll see he intimates that he's planning on, by executive order, I think, expanding our wildernesses, our wildlife refuges, or our national monuments. This could be good news, but also those sorts of things have to be done within limits and within reason, for the right reasons in the right places.
Well, God bless you, Colonel, because I've always admired you for your work with the National Park System and preserving wildlife, and that was one of your highlights, I think, of your administration.
I agree.
And, of course, prior to being in the administration, the concept of conserving the game and its habitat was important to me in great part for when I was a rancher in the Dakota Territory as a young man. This is the 1880s. I ranched there roughly from 1884 to early 1887 after the terrible winter of 86-87. Took about two-thirds of my cattle from the free range. I had seen the game decimated by overhunting, the near extinction of the bison. I thought the Rocky Mountain elk would go the way of history. But along with George Bird Grinnell, the editor then of Forest and Stream, later to be Field and Stream, we founded Boone and Crockett, the nation's first fair hunting and conservation organization. We even assisted in the saving of the bison. Professor Hornaday and others joined me in founding the North American Bison Society. The herd in Yellowstone had been decimated by poaching, we took some of the bison from Yellowstone, some bison from a private herd in North Texas. We sent them to the Bronx Zoo, where Professor Hornaday administered the New York Zoological Society. There he experimented with grasses at the what is today the Bronx Botanical Garden to find the right mixture of grasses that would strengthen the bison as he bred them. And years later, he sent train cars full of bison back to the Yellowstone into Wind Cave National Park in South Dakota. And Mr. Batson, if you listen very closely today, you can hear that those bison speak with a distinct Bronx accent.
Hey, we talked about on another show a while back about how cows moo in the accent of whatever their wherever they live. Remember that?
I do.
Remember we said the cows in England said moo. Remember? Moo. Moo.
Swihart, sign me up for that class. I can't wait to sit Indian style in the reading circle.
Oh, we don't say that before, Colonel. Colonel, you don't say Indian style anymore.
Oh, that's right. It's another word that's gone by the wayside. Well,
yeah.
Don't tell that to the fans of the Fighting Sioux at the University of North Dakota.
Colonel, it's sit like a pretzel or crisscross applesauce. And at my age, it is hard. I can sit like that, but it takes me quite a long time to get up. I say to the kids when I sit like that, I say, I send them back to their seats, and I say, boys and girls, Mrs. Wyhart will be up shortly.
Oh, my.
Sit like a pretzel.
Yeah, sit like a pretzel. Did they have pretzels back in your day?
Oh, of course. The pretzels, as they are today, are very often found in the taverns to increase the man's thirst, to put a little something on his palate to go with the many beers that he might be having in the tavern. A pretzel was certainly tavern food in my day.
Well, there we go. Pretzel's been around a long time. When you come visit me, we'll have pretzels together. We can sit like a pretzel and eat pretzels.
Strawberry milk and pretzels. I'm getting hungry, Mrs. Swihart.
Yep.
I always, when I had a chance to hear you speak a short time ago at the Wheeler National Wildlife Refuge in Decatur, Alabama, you told a wonderful story behind a particular stuffed animal, and I would love for you to tell that story for our listeners here tonight.
It was in 1902. My friends from Mississippi and Louisiana invited me on a bear hunt in the Delta on the Mississippi side of that great river. I was also being called on to give my advice with regards to the settlement of a boundary dispute between the two states, the Mississippi River then not being controlled from flooding, and annually, new islands or abutments of land would be created. The states would argue with regards to who had jurisdiction over these new creations of land, and on this basis I was invited to go hunting north of Vicksburg, south of Greenville, in the Delta, nearby a little crossroads called Onward, Mississippi. And, well, as you may know, you can either have a good hunt or a good picnic. You generally cannot have them both in the same time, at the same place, but my friends from Mississippi and Louisiana attempted to outdo one another with regards to the expression of southern hospitality, and so between the drought that had decimated the population of bear in the area that summer and the commotion of the great picnicking going on, well, we'd been 3 days in the cane brakes and had not even seen a bear. And on the third night, the famous hunting guide, Holt Collier, he of Greenville, he who, though an African-American, began the Civil War as a body servant to a Confederate officer, he was such a good shot that he was actually given a rifle and performed his duties as a private in the Confederate States of America, the Army of the Confederacy. His grave is now dedicated as a Confederate grave in Greenville. Well, in any case, Mr. Collier, who'd killed some 300 or 400 bear to that point in his life, he came into camp and said, Mr. President, I shall have you a bear by morning if I need to bring it into camp on the end of a rope. The next morning, very early, Mr. Collier and I went out scouting through the swamplands, saw no bear, though we were hunting with dogs, and returned to the camp. Later that morning, I heard men yelling and dogs barking. I raced out from my tent, and there, indeed, Mr. Collier had tethered an old wounded male bear to a tree. Now, the bear was greatly wounded on its chest. Hunting dogs had attacked the bear. The bear killed two of the hunting dogs. Mr. Collier, wanting to save his prize hunting dogs, but fearing to fire his rifle for fear of harming the dogs, he went into the shallow water in which the bear and the dogs were wrestling, and he broke the barrel of his gun across the bear's head. The bear was bleeding from a great gash and wound on its head. When the bear was dazed by the blow, Mr. Collier tied one end of his lariat around the bear's neck, dove and tied the other end to a tree, and this horrific scene was the scene upon which I came rushing from my tent. My horror compounded when one in my hunting party said, "Mr. President, there's your bear. Go ahead and shoot your bear." And what a cowardly thing that would have been to do. I refused to shoot that bear. The story of that refusal spread throughout the country. When I returned to the White House, I discovered that the cartoonist, my friend Clifford Berryman, had drawn a cartoon of the incident and called it Drawing the Line in Mississippi. The cartoon showed me refusing to shoot a small bear cub tied to a tree. That was published in the Washington papers and syndicated nationally, and soon thereafter, I received a letter at the White House from Mrs. Mictum. She and her family, eventually the Ideal Toy Company of New York City, New York. But Mrs. Mictum, in her letter to me, asking permission to make a stuffed bear and to name it after me, I wrote Mrs. Mictum back. I said, "You may go ahead and do so, but I don't think it will help your sales very much at all." They began making what history was then calling Teddy's Bear. Teddy Bear.
Yep.
That's just wonderful.
Really quite an embarrassing story for a big game hunter such as myself. But while there's a great deal of consternation for me with regards to the calamity of the hunting trip, the dividends that have been paid by teddy bears throughout the years, well, I'm quite happy to have my name associated with that wonderful little toy of comfort.
Hey, you know what? Your name could have been associated with a lot worse, you know.
Right.
So,
I'll take it.
That's right.
That and, I think the Rough Riders, Teddy's Terrors, perhaps other than the national parks. What comes to mind when the American people think of me?
How did you enjoy your likeness on Mount Rushmore in South Dakota?
Well, have you seen me there, Mr. Batson?
I have. I've seen that in person.
Well, I apologize if I'm rather stone-faced there. But the Gutzon Borglum, of course, the artist who envisioned and executed the great sculpture, he was a friend of mine. His son would join him for visits late night at the White House. His father and I would discuss art and sculpture and hunting and adventures. And young Lincoln, as often a boy will do, fell asleep while two older men talked. And I pointed over to napping Lincoln in the White House. And I said, "Gutzon, your boy is the only man brave enough to fall asleep in the presence of the President of the United States of America." So, of course, his son Lincoln finished the great sculpture after Gutzon's passing, just before the completion of the statue.
Well, it's absolutely phenomenal, and very proud that I know part of that. It's just fantastic.
Well, it's
wonderful.
A delightful memorial. Of course, people from throughout the world come to see that iconic location, and some very good things are being done to incorporate and acknowledge the Sioux Nation, which was so mistreated by the American government, the giving of the Black Hills and taking them back when gold was discovered, and of course the slow and steady progress on the great sculpture being done nearby in honor of Crazy Horse, one of the Sioux chiefs.
I can remember as a youngster seeing the beginnings of the Crazy Horse Mountain sculpture, and boy, it's come a long way.
It's a phenomenal work. It really does dwarf the president.
Yes, I think that's one of the things, Colonel, that when I saw Mount Rushmore in person, it always seems smaller. I don't know how to explain that, but it absolutely does.
You think it's smaller in real life than you'd imagined it?
Yeah, after seeing it in pictures and various other ways that it's been portrayed, I did. I mean, it's still incredible. I mean, it's still an amazing, but I thought it always looked bigger in the pictures.
Oh, Mr. Batson, sometimes when you actually see something, it is a little smaller. No.
Whatever you say.
I know.
What?
I'm saying I'll have a drink of my Diet Coke right now.
Okay. So,
she is wetting her whistle to sing for us now, isn't she?
Almost right. Thank you so much for reminding me because I
wasn't about to forget that we've got a songbird with us this evening.
I was almost off the hook.
Almost. So what is the name of the selection that you'll be favoring us with this evening, Mrs. Schreier?
Actually, I'm teaching them two songs that are new to me for the 100th day of school tomorrow, and they're not very complicated. And that, which is good for me. Which, by the way, Mr. Batson, you should have been able to hear me sing on Facebook because I post an occasional dorky video solely for Billy Willard, you know, because I know how much he enjoys my song.
Oh, that's right. Well, I'm sure the Colonel Roosevelt will as well.
But anyway, the ones I do on Facebook are generally country songs. But I sang a lullaby for my niece the other day. Anyway, this one is it's just called 100 Days. And actually, I am just, you know, this is probably like the third time I've actually seen it. So it goes, we've been working in our classroom for 100 days. We've been working in our classroom in the school we love. Hooray! Rising early in the morning, seeing friends and teachers. Every day we come to our school, we learn something new. Okay, that's really bad, but it's okay.
That was delightful. That was wonderful. I recognize the tune.
I bet you do. How about this one?
I've been working on the railroad is what they would have said back in my day.
How about this one? 10 fun, 20 fun, 30 fun school days, 40 fun, 50 fun, 60 fun school days, 70 fun, 80 fun, 90 fun school days, 100 fun days of school.
Well.
How about that? Is that a simple little thing right there? Yes.
Now, will they be able to memorize that pretty quickly with your leadership?
Yeah, they'll memorize really fast. Usually all I have to do after I teach them a couple times, or I sing it with them a couple times, I also have it made as a poster so they can read off of it. But I'll usually just start them out and then they'll finish off on their own. So, yeah, I don't really have to sing that much for them.
Mrs. Schweinhardt, those are lucky little children in Warsaw, Indiana. I'm sure you're a blessing to them and to their families.
Well, I hope, because this is probably my calling, so this is my one chance. But I do the best I can.
As along with a worldwide broadcaster now.
I have. You want to know this? You want to know our winter song, which is so appropriate for this time of year. And actually, we're about to wrap this one up, but we've been singing it for a couple weeks now, off and on. And it's really, I don't know. It's one of my favorites. This one. It's our winter song.
Okay.
I'll sing it for you, okay?
All right.
The snow's falling over the meadow. The snow's falling over the town. I sit by my living room window, just watching the snow falling down. Snowflakes falling, watching the snow falling down. And then there's another verse. But anyway, that's just a sampling. That's just our favorite. We sing it. And it's fun when we sing it and the snow's falling outside. It's just the kids like it. So.
Delightful. Wonderful.
Yeah, you probably didn't have, back in your day, you didn't have American Idol. But nowadays we have American Idol. And the boys and girls in my class think that I should try out for American Idol. So that's how brainwashed I have them.
Wonderful. You've got your fans. And consider me amongst the fans as well. I look forward to singing with you young charges. We'll sing a song or two. I'll bring some songs out of the closet myself.
Well, good.
That would be wonderful.
Yes.
So, Billy Willard, how was your critique tonight on Mrs. Swihart singing?
Billy.
She actually, I have to give her a 100.
Oh.
You're just trying to make up for, you know, all the damage to my self-esteem that you caused several weeks ago.
Billy Willard is such a kind soul. So what's on the agenda, Colonel?
This visit tonight is via the telephone from the Palm Coast of Florida, where tomorrow night I'll be with the patrons of the Ormond Beach Library, and I'll be visiting the school children and senior citizens here nearby to Ormond Beach. Of course, Florida played a key role in my life. The Rough Riders assembling in Tampa before our trip to Cuba in 1898, the Spanish-American War, and Ocala National Forest, the first national forest east of the Mississippi River, declared by me in 1908, and that first federal bird sanctuary, Pelican Island, to be followed by others, Key West, Matt Lachey, and others along the Gulf Coast. The bird life here is tremendous. I'm sure you all know the wonderful bird life, especially this time of year throughout Florida. I've enjoyed walking in some of the parks here in the community and seen quite a number of the wonderful migratory fowl and the seabirds.
Well, God bless you for all the work that you've done with the saving of our wild lands. Without you, where would we be today? I mean,
well, the credit goes to the American people. And it continues. And we mentioned with regards to the State of the Union speech, a speech which I never gave in person to Congress. The tradition since the time of Jefferson was to send the message over as a typed document to be read by the clerk of each of the chambers. It was Wilson, I believe, that reinstituted the annual message in person to Congress. But, of course, the thought is that each and every message that I made to Congress had the issue of conservation, of our forests, of our wildlife. And I said often, shame unto us, if we leave our natural resources in worse condition than we found them, that we must actually, while wisely using them, by exercising stewardship, that we must leave our natural resources in better condition for our children and our children's children and for the generations of Americans not yet born in the womb of time. And the credit goes properly to the American people for very often getting Congress and the federal bureaucracy to do the right thing with regards to our wild places and our natural resources.
Well, you've done a wonderful job, and we appreciate your time. We want to tell everyone, get with Colonel Teddy Roosevelt at www.teddyrooseveltshow.com, and you visited the White House in all 50 states in your travels?
And we're just getting started. We go international this year. I'll be in Holland this spring, where the ancestral roots of the Roosevelt family originate from the province of Bremen. And the Roosevelt Institute there memorializes and perpetuates studies and foreign exchanges, perpetuates the memory of my cousin Franklin and my niece Eleanor as well. And, of course, this is the centennial of the opening of the Panama Canal, what I consider my greatest accomplishment. The canal was opened in 1914, just on the eve of the terrible war in Europe. But I expect I'll be going to Panama quite a bit. And someday soon, when again we can say Cuba Libre, I do believe I'll be running up Kettle Hill in the San Juan Heights and telling visitors to Cuba about the adventures there in 1898. So, onward and upward, and Mr. Batson, I wish you and your Cheryl the best as you travel the country in your important work of sharing wildlife with the young school children across the country.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. That means a lot coming from you.
Well, hey, Colonel, let me know when you've got me on your schedule.
And I will communicate with you directly through the school, Mrs. Swihart, and please, Mr. Batson's got my contact information. And that website that was given out, teddyrooseveltshow.com. Feel free to write me via that website at any time. I'll respond.
Awesome.
Dr. Day, what a wonderful show.
Great show. It was a history class tonight.
One of our favorites, I have to say.
And I know why Colonel Theodore Roosevelt was on the show tonight.
Oh, absolutely.
He's a bull moose.
But Dr. Day, I told the press in 1912 that I was stripped to the waist and healthy as a bull moose, and that my hat was in the ring, and subsequently the Progressive Party took that moniker, the Bull Moose, as its nickname. But I look forward to our next visit. I'll have to tell you about my friend, my appointment to the Supreme Court, William R. Day of Ohio, McKinley's Secretary of State, a member of our Peace Commission, maybe a cousin of yours, Dr. Day. And we'll have to sometime as well share with your listeners the story that I heard from Bauman, the fellow who may have encountered the Bigfoot there in the Sawtooth Mountains by the Salmon and Wisdom Rivers. Plenty to talk about and visit about in the future, and a joy and a pleasure to be with you and your listeners. So very nice to be with you, Mr. Batts.
Well, it was certainly a pleasure, and you have an invitation back whenever you want. What a wonderful show. Folks, that will be hard to top.
Yeah.
We'll be
what
back
a great guy.
Yes, absolutely.
You know what? It's really, to me, pretty honorable to have someone that is willing to help keep history alive like that. And, you know, my dad actually did a lot with, it's a little different, but a lot with Civil War reenacting. And you know what? He would go to schools in uniform and talk. And I think that is something that really grabs people. And so I think that's awesome. I'm glad that we have people like you.
Well, wonderful to hear about your father. It makes me wonder, the newspaper man and the fiction writer Ambrose Bierce is a son of Warsaw, Indiana. He wrote a great deal about his experiences in the Civil War, and I wonder if, I might have to do some reading from Ambrose Bierce when I visit with your older school children.
Yes. Yeah.
Totally.
I look forward to it.
Bully's right. Wonderful show tonight. Folks, have a great week. Stay warm.
Yep, everybody go have some pretzels and strawberry milk.
Fully, and a good night to all. God bless.
Thank you, Turtle.
Thank you. Good night.
And you've been listening to Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. We'll see you next week, folks. Thank you.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.